Hello and welcome to the third episode of BoagWorld.com, the podcast dedicated to all things web design related for anybody, whether you're a developer, a designer, or a project manager working on websites on a daily basis. In this episode of BoagWorld.com, I've asked a colleague of mine, Marcus Linton, to join us. Marcus, do you want to just introduce yourself and kind of say how you know me and how you fit into things?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, I'll try not to be too monosyllabic because I'm hugely nervous about this, as you are as well, I'm sure. I work with Paul, a company called Headscape, basically involved in business development and project management.
So it's worth noticing that Marcus is a salesperson, so I do apologise if he starts selling at you at any point in this podcast. Okay, so in this episode of BoagWorld.com, we are going to cover, as our main feature, the top 10 mistakes made by clients. I think this has come out of the fact that myself and Marcus and everybody else at Headscape recently got together for a leaving do for somebody. And you know what it's like, we kind of covered the gamut of discussions from what the best cheese is, England's success in cricket, I think we were also discussing, and then we got on to just stupid things that clients do. And so obviously not our clients, because our clients are all wonderful and we have deep respect for them all. But some different issues came out, and I thought it'd be nice to share those simply because it kind of highlights some of the pitfalls of web design.
Gives us a chance to have a moan as well, eh?
Well, yeah, you don't get enough of, do you really? Okay, then we're going to go on to look at news, and if we have time after all of that, we're going to review some various bits of software. Okay, so the top 10 things that clients do wrong, or in fact we do wrong as web developers, because I think we're just as guilty of some of these as clients are. Okay, so I'll start with number one and then we'll go from there. The number one, and by the way, these are in no particular order, the number one thing that we've kind of identified as things that are just so stupid, and this one kind of came up relatively recently and was probably the basis for our rant, is how marketing departments sometimes have kind of got this ridiculous obsession with contact us forms and forms in general. And I think this kind of comes out of a desire within marketing departments to kind of get as much demographic information that they can on people at the expense of usability or anything else. And there's kind of two examples that came up when we were chatting around this. One was people that have far too many fields on a contact us form. So you go to this contact us form, and you know, normally you have to put in probably your first name, your last name, company name if it's a corporate site, and then just something like telephone number or email address, and then there's a field where you can make your comments. Well, we've come across situations before now where that very short form has turned into 17 fields, you know, where they kind of not want to know what your dog's name is and what your mother's maiden name is and all that kind of stuff. And even worse, sometimes they make these fields compulsory, so that if, for example, you don't have a mobile telephone number, you can't actually complete the form. So it's an absolute nightmare, and it's something that we've seen before. What was the other one, Marcus? There was another one.
We worked with a client quite a long time ago, actually, where they developed some very cool downloads, but you basically had to tell them, you know, whether you were married or whether you had a dog and this kind of thing, to be able to download these things. And we tried our hardest to get more people to download these cool applications. They shouldn't do it, but they weren't having any of it. So.
And what's so stupid in situations like that is because the majority of people realise that their contact information is of value, and that if you give out your contact information, that is something of value you're giving to the company that is requesting it, because they know that companies want your information, they want to be able to follow you up and send you junk mail and stuff. So it's like they're almost asking you to pay to be able to be sold at. Because to view an online demo, for example, you know, it's the company's opportunity to show off and say, here we are and look how talented we are and look at the wonderful products we have. And you're making people pay before they're allowed to see that. And it just strikes me as absurd. It'd be like on the Headscape site, we've got a section that shows off our content management systems, and it would be ludicrous to expect people to tell us who they are, because they're obviously not ready to buy yet at that stage. They're just wanting to have a look round, and it's just like, just don't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, surely you're going to get more and better quality sales leads if you just let everybody see it.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me anyway. But.
I mean, the quality thing is key, because, I mean, if you're forced to fill these in, you don't really want to be contacted. You're just filling them in so you can get the information. You're not ready to be sold at, so, you know, why not wait until people actually ask for you to contact them? And how much better will that lead be? Well, I think part of the problem sometimes is the way companies are organised. Are you doing some soaring in the background or something there, Marcus?
No.
Just sounded like it because of the microphone. Don't worry. Yeah, so sometimes you get, the soaring put me off. Oh, yeah. Sometimes in companies you get a marketing department that's separate from a sales department. So what happens is the marketing department, their targets, how they're judged is by how many leads they produce. And obviously the sales department is on how many sales they place. So the marketing department don't care about the quality of leads as long as there's a lot of them. And I've had a client tell me that before, and you just think, that's such bad business practice. Anyway, enough ranting on that. I think contact forms, the answer is to keep them short, only have required fields that are absolutely necessary, and never ever expect people to fill in information so you can sell to them. I think that about sums it up, doesn't it, Marcus?
Absolutely, spot on.
Okay, so do you want to do number two?
Yeah, next one on the list is unrealistic deadlines, which in our experience, I think probably deadlines for the duration of the project they're normally pretty good. The problem is that everybody expects their project to start tomorrow, whereas we have to schedule in work. And of course, when you're trying to bid for a project, you don't want to say you're going to have to wait 6 weeks before we can start on this. So what ends up happening is that if we win a lot of work in a particular month, we end up having to start all these projects at the same time. Which is tricky. I guess that's life for pretty much every business across the planet. But it's a hard thing to get scheduling in when you're bidding for work. Easier on subsequent sales, but on initial work it's very hard.
I think also from the client side that they're often unrealistic about the length of time it's going to take to get content from elsewhere in the company, or if you're tying in with back-end systems, to be able, how long it's going to take to talk to those various people that run those systems. And it's just generally underestimate how long a website project takes. I mean, what would you say? I mean, our average project, how long? 3 months, do we often say?
8 to 12 weeks, or was that 2 to 3 months, isn't it? Whether that's actually the case, well, you know, it'd be interesting to have a look at the work we've done and see whether we really do deliver within 8 to 12 weeks. Some projects we do, some we don't. I mean, while we're moaning about clients, the main factor, and I'm sure other web design companies will agree with this, the main factor that holds things up is waiting for content from clients.
Yeah, but that's something we're going to come on to later.
Indeed. So I won't jump the gun.
Well, no, I mean, the part of these things is you ramble off endlessly on various things. That's why I like doing it with more than one person, because, you know, you can have huge tangents. Okay, budget. Budget is always the big sticking point, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of from two sides, really. One is that I think often cases clients' budgets are unrealistic. That I guess part of the problem is there's so many web design companies out there, and they range from, you know, students working out of their back bedroom to huge kind of multinational web design agencies stretching across the globe. And I think that the clients, it's not so much a kind of a problem on the client side, but it's very hard to judge how much things cost. I mean, you go around the internet sometimes and you see, you know, get your website for £99. I mean, it's like, you know, that's just not realistic. And so I think clients struggle to know what their budget are. But I think the main problem is that they're very closed down about discussing it. You know, they won't come to you and say, you know, this is what we want. How much do you think something like this is going to cost? Well, they do say that, but in a way where you feel like you have to give them the final quote there and then. It's not a kind of interactive discussion. And other clients just won't talk about their budget at all. And then you're kind of left going, how do I price this? You know, how do I pitch it? There's so many different ways we could do this, and we could provide their solution in so many different ways that have different prices. I mean, I always think content management's a big one. We get clients to come to us and say, how much is it going to cost for me to have a website which I can update and change myself? Well, on one hand, you could do that with a product like Macromedia's Contribute, which only costs $60-$70 or whatever it is, which will allow them to do basic editing to their pages. Or you could provide them an all singing, all dancing content management system that, you know, if it's an enterprise level one with various kind of workflow tools, you could be looking at, well, easily tens of thousands of pounds. So it's a difficult one. But I imagine, I mean, this is one you encounter more than me, Marcus, I suppose.
Yeah, I do. And to be honest, I mean, it's a lot better than it was when we started working together, however many, six, seven, 8 years ago. This was a major problem because nobody knew how much websites cost, and neither did we really. We used to underprice everything hugely. But you know, the business world hasn't caught up yet with what it actually costs to build websites. And as you just said, there are many, many different ways of building websites. A lot of clients want multiple design mock-ups. Other clients are happy with designs almost immediately. So the amount of time spent on those can vary drastically. So I guess from my point of view, it's getting better, people's expectations, but it's we're still not there. But there are, we get an awful lot of inquiries with people expecting to spend, figure X on something that will cost 10 times that. I guess it's just a question of, the business world getting more educated on what these things cost, because it's not a problem within, say, print design. Everybody knows how much it costs to get a brochure done if they want it done this way or that way. Mm. It's getting better, but it's something that we still have to highlight, I guess.
Mm. Also, you get those great inquiries. I love what we get on our website to say, I want a website. How much is it going to cost? And it's like, well, what do you want? What do you want that website to do? And I always compare it to like the housing market, how much does a house cost? Well, it depends on how many bedrooms it's got. It depends on where in the country it's located. It depends what's going on in the market at the time. And there's so many factors that affect it that, you know, it's like, where do you start? And I think if you are a client, if you are somebody that does commission external web design agencies, I guess the advice is to really clearly define what it is that you want the site to do and to achieve. Mm. And don't be afraid to just ring up some web design companies and say, look, help me to get an idea of budget on this. I'm nowhere near actually getting to the point of putting this out to tender, but I need to get an idea of budget. Talk me through it and help me with that. And they'll be more than willing to do it because they'll hope that you'll come back to them in the future when you actually get to the invitation to tender. I mean, we love it when people come to us before they've got complete briefs, because we can help them, shape those briefs correctly, help them with budget and business cases and all that kind of stuff as well. So don't be afraid to kind of use and abuse the web design companies out there to get some free consultancy.
Thanks, Paul. Cheers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Your problem, not mine. Yeah. Well, that's a fair comment. We do like it when people bring it
Absolutely,
up.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, don't have a go. Right, I mean, next one you're supposed to be doing, Marcus, but I'm just so irate about this that I have to say this one myself. Sorry.
No, you don't. I'm starting on this one.
Oh, okay. Go on, then.
Well, the reason why I wanted to... This is designed by committee, by the way. I was going to say in the previous point that we do a lot of work with the public sector, probably a little bit more than we do with the commercial sector. Yeah. And the public sector are better about discussing budget and knowing what things cost. But when it comes to design by committee, the commercial sector has got it right, and the public sector hasn't, more often than not.
They're a nightmare.
Yeah, feel free to rant now, Paul.
Well, it's like, it makes me so weary. Yeah, like Michael says, we do a lot of work with the public sector, so we do a lot of work in higher education, and we do a lot of work in the heritage sector as well. I think the higher education sector are the worst on this. I hope none of our higher education sector clients are going to listen to this, because otherwise we'll probably lose business hand over fist. But they do have this mentality where they have a web group which consists of anywhere between, I don't know, about 6 people and 20. I mean, we really have been to meetings before where you walk into the room and go, flipping heck, how many people are sitting around this table all trying to decide on what their website should be like? And committees, by their nature, slow things down, and everybody knows that. But when it comes to design, it can have a fatal effect on the design of a website, because design is a very subjective area. Everybody has their own opinion on design. So, for example, you know, I'm somebody that likes my drop shadows, and I like certain color palettes and that kind of thing, while somebody else might like a very clean, minimalistic design. And then, I mean, color is a particularly bad example of this as well, because people perceive colour in completely different ways. 1 in 20 men are colourblind, for a start. Women and men respond in totally different ways to colour. So you get a group of people all together, all commenting on design, and what you end up with is a grey mush at the end that has no real design. It's the lowest common denominator, always comes out. So please, please, if you're responsible for the design aspects of any website, try and avoid it being designed by committee, because it just devastates any website, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's good rant. Yeah, I mean, the message is have someone who's in charge, have someone who has the final say.
Yeah.
The problem with the higher education sector is there are so many powerful people who have equal say, so it's not really their fault, but a few of the people we've worked with in that sector have realised this and have done the right thing, but it's something that we always have to discuss with them up front.
I tell you, there is one good one, and I'm going to mention them by name because I feel I can, because they're a good example, which is, at the moment we're doing some work for City University in London. And again, they've got their little kind of committee of people that need to make decisions. And it, in some senses, I can understand it, need to get everybody on board and all the rest of it. But when it comes to design, their attitude is very much, none of us are going to make the decision on this. None of us are going to make the decision at all. Not even the web design company, which in this case is us. But rather, we're going to put the design in front of real users and get their responses to it. And just, I think that's just brilliant. I think it's so much better of actually doing some real usability testing and seeing how the real target audience responds to the design. So yay to City University, you're in my good books at the moment. Okay, so next one's mine, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Even though I ranted about the last one. This is it's a rarer example, but it's still one that we see from time to time, which is that some of our clients insist on copying their competition. So they look at all their competition sites and they go, yeah, I want to be like so-and-so, or, you know, we've got to be laid out like they have, and we've got to use do everything in the same way as they have. And, I mean, there are good aspects of that and there are bad aspects. So the good reason for doing it is because if somebody is looking for, I don't know, a new telephone, for example. I just happen to be looking at my telephone. If they want to buy a new telephone and they go to all the various shops that sell that kind of thing, and they're looking at one website after another, and it's nice to have a consistency of terminology, a consistency of navigation, so they can always find the same thing. So, you know, if everybody else is putting telephones under consumer electronics, you shouldn't suddenly put it under audiovisual, for example.
How about telephones, though? That would be the best thing, surely.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm just trying to give a broader example. A larger category. Yeah, so you see the basic idea of keeping terminologies right. But, and this is the downside, is you don't stand out from the crowd if your design, your look and feel is just the same as all of your competition. You know, and again, if we use the higher education sector, so many of the higher education sites that we do have smiley people walking around, you know, kind of young, handsome people all looking gorgeous, and they really don't stand out from the crowd at all. And so if you take a site like the University of Portsmouth, which we did, in that particular example, we said, right, okay, well, let's not use that kind of smiley picture of student with building in background of halls of residence, but let's use illustration instead to make them stand out from the crowd. And I think there are times when you need to be a bit radical and you need to take a radical step to make, distinguish yourself from everybody else. So there's a balancing act there, but I think blindly copying the competition because of lack of imagination is not a good excuse, really.
No, I agree.
Okay, you've got no more comments other than you agree.
Not really, not on that one.
Okay, fair enough. All right, then, got him.
Oh, right, yes, moving on. Creeping specifications. This is something that I guess most service-type companies like web design agencies suffer from. And it tends to be the commercial sector again, opposed to the public sector, that keep trying to wedge a little bit more in here and there. It's a very tricky thing to keep going back to, say, a contract and saying, no, well, actually, this is what we agreed, because we're always trying to keep our clients as happy as possible and deliver to them what they want. So it's a hard balancing act to go, well, yeah, it's only a small amount of work, so we'll do it. Inevitably, we do it, and then sort of 10 small things later, you realise that you've actually added a fair bit of extra work onto the project. Very tricky thing to get tough on. I guess we're just moaning, really.
Yeah.
on this particular one.
We're sounding like grumpy old men now.
Yeah.
There is, even from the client side of you, I think there's a good reason to avoid creeping specifications. One is because you need to write your list of what you want your website to do. This is what we want our website to do. And inevitably, through the process, you think of other things. Other things pop into your mind as you
Absolutely.
Get into it more. But I think it's much more sensible in many cases just to set those things aside and start creating a second list, a list really for phase two of your website build. Because one is, if you add it to the existing site, it's going to push out your launch date. You know, mm-hmm. even if you manage to persuade your web design company to do this for free, it's going to push back your launch date, and it's going to get further and further back. Two, it's going to probably cause tension between you and your web developer, because they've obviously gone for a fixed price contract with you, and they'll try and persuade you that this is an additional chargeable piece. And really, keeping that relationship is a good thing. Three, that when you launch the site, you have this big PR thing where you tell everybody, hey, we've got this really cool new site. And then you've got nothing to say after that. But if you kind of spread those extra things you've thought of into phase two, phase three, phase four, you've got opportunities to go back to people and say, hey, now we've added this really cool new feature to our site. It's worth coming and having a look at it. So stage development is really worthwhile, and too many clients try and take on too much in one go, and they kind of bite off more than they can chew, and this project balloons out of all proportion, and deadlines go back and back and back and back. And I can give you an example of it, and whether I'll get in trouble with Marcus for giving this example, I don't know. But one of our biggest clients for a long time was the National Trust, and we did a lot of National Trust, and we did a lot of work with them. And they had a big reshuffle at some point, and they decided that they were going to move their web development stuff across from marketing over into IT. And one of the things IT decided to do was they were going to move their entire site across into a new content management system, and they were going to rationalize all of the databases and all the back-end functionality and all the rest of it.
Which all makes sense.
Perfect sense. But it was an enormous undertaking. The National Trust site is absolutely huge. I mean, and it's made up of so many different things, and there are so many different databases in it. It was ginormous. And how long ago was it they decided to do that?
Ooh, must be 2.5. Yeah, probably about 2.5 years ago.
So 2.5 years ago, they put an embargo on any other future web development. 2.5 years ago. And they, I don't know how many times they've scheduled launch dates for that website to go live, and it just hasn't because of the size and complexity of the project. But if they've taken it in smaller bite-sized chunks, I can't believe I just used that phrase. Sorry, we
That's
had
a fine.
We had an old colleague that used the word bite-sized chunk at every random opportunity. If you take it in bite-sized chunks, it's much more achievable, and your site's going to go live quicker, and you're going to have that ability to go back again and again and again and promote new features. I think that's fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah, spot on.
Okay. So is it my turn?
Yes.
Isn't it? Okay, yeah. One thing that a lot of clients do is they become obsessed with how their website looks on their individual PC. At the expense sometimes of everybody else in the world. And you do end up finding yourself as web designers designing this site specifically around your client's PC than you do around anything else. So if that person happens to be using a Mac, for example, then at a certain resolution, then that's what you're designing for. And it just gets silly sometimes. And I think it's really important that If you're not a web person, but you are responsible for running websites, you need to bear in mind that it's not just about making that website look great on your PC, or your Mac or whatever. That, you know, that we have to take into account as we do design, different video cards that display color in different ways. We have to take into account different monitors that display color in different ways. We have to take into account different resolutions, screen resolutions, whether it be 800, 600, or 1024x768, or higher and higher. We have to take into account multiple browser applications, multiple devices even these days, so that there is a constant, despite what purists say, that you say you can build one site that looks great on all, there is a constant trade-off between all those different things, and you need to take those into account. For example, one thing that I get from Marcus a lot, because he uses a laptop with the associated screen that you get with laptops, he's always going, oh, I can't see that background image because it's really light. It's so light on my screen it disappears. But what I have to do is I also have to take into account other people, especially some Mac users, with their monitors that display colours a lot darker in some situations. So I've kind of got this balancing act of all these different people, and you have to kind of keep everybody happy. So just bear in mind, it may not look great on your PC, but look at it on other PCs as well. And look at it on a variety of different monitors, different resolutions, and that'll give you a much better idea of how it's looking overall. One thing you must never do, which was going to be in my top 10 list, but I dropped it, but I'm going to bring it up anyway because it kind of relates to this, is don't print out designs. If a web designer puts up a design on a website for you to look at, don't print it out. Take it around the office and ask people what they think of it, right? Such a stupid idea. Sorry if somebody that does that. But it's like, this is designed to be viewed on screen. Therefore, view it on screen. By printing out, it's going to screw up the colours, it won't look right, and it just is the bad way to view sites. So please, please don't do it. I think that's all I've got to say on that one.
Well, I was going to say, this particular point was a double-edged sword before web standards came along, because we'd get clients that would insist on testing on every single possible monitor, browser, type of operating system, and we used to end up having to do about sort of, 23 different versions of sites, but fortunately because of web standards, that's kind of gone out the window a bit. But that's something that occurred to me when I read this particular point, that it used to be the other way around.
Yeah.
We would moan about clients that wanted it working on IE2 and things like that.
Yeah, but not a problem now. We work with web standards.
Indeed.
Although interesting, I've received a number of emails going, you need to tell us more about web standards. We don't understand it all, so I need to spend some time on that. But I'm not going to do it today. And equally, I had other emails from people saying, well, I disagree with what you've said on web standards. That isn't the way it works. So we've got quite a broad audience, and I apologise if it doesn't always fit you exactly what's being said. Anyway, we've got to move on. We're almost at half hour and we're still waffling.
Well, that doesn't surprise me in the least.
No.
Okay, next point is thinking people will magically find their site. yes. yes, build it and they will come. Well, no, they won't, unless you spend some of your budget on marketing your site. This is much more your field, Paul, so I think you should probably talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't got huge amounts to say on it, other than the fact that you need to integrate your website into your overall marketing strategy. It's not enough just to put up a website. A lot of people thought of a website like TV advertising. You put it up there and it brings people in. The better way to think of a website is it's like a shop. If you open a shop, you have to advertise and promote that shop for people to know that it's there. So your website has to be integrated into your overall marketing strategy, whether that be the general principle we always give is wherever your logo is, your URL should be there too. But also you should consider online marketing as well, from search engine optimization to pay-per-click advertising. There's a whole range of different marketing strategies you can use. And I'll perhaps put up some of those on my website, which is boagworld.com, just for you to be able to look at those. If you go boagworld.com/podcast, you'll be able to see all of the various things that we talk about today. I think we'll move on because we're running out of time.
Okay,
underestimating how much you as the client have to contribute to a project. You think that if you're going to get an external web design agency in, that they should do all of the work. And yes, we should do a lot of it. But don't forget that you are going to be responsible for the content on your website. Now, even if you use a web design company to do editing and proofreading and even copywriting, at the end of the day, you still need to inform them about your product or what it is that you're promoting through the website. And there's a lot of time that needs to go into the discussion of content. If you're writing the content, which the majority of our clients do, then there is a lot of work there. And trust me, I know this because I'm currently writing the content for our Headscape website. And it takes a long time and a lot of effort. So don't underestimate how long that's going to take. Make sure you've got time in your schedule amongst all the hundreds of other things that you have to do that have got nothing to do with the website to sit down and write this content. And leave yourself ample time in your time scales for this, because it's a big one. It is really a big one.
Yeah, if these points were ordered, this would be number one.
Would it?
I think so.
Yeah, possibly. Mm-hmm. Design by committee would be number one for me.
Well, I was going to say the other point on this is the other thing that a lot of clients don't allow time for is the amount of time they need to review the work that the web design company's done, and basically sign off processes. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of time, and if we're waiting for sign off, we can't carry on doing the work, and therefore timescales get pushed back, etc., etc. So yeah, it's a big one. I guess you said at the start of this, a lot of these problems are of our making. We possibly don't talk about this enough at the beginning of projects.
Yeah, could be right. And there's a follow-on. The last point is almost a follow-on from this, really, I think, which is that I can't remember whether it's you or me, so I'll just keep talking.
Yeah, just keep on.
Which is that also... You're not putting enough, clients aren't putting enough thought into keeping their content fresh and updated as their website goes on. And it's so important that you're constantly updating your site, that it's always got new things on there, and that what is on there is up to date. Because people will visit your website. I think for an e-commerce site, they can visit a website anywhere between 5 and 12 times before they make a purchase. And you need to have things that draw them back time and time again. And there's nothing more damaging to your reputation as an organization of having content up there that is blatantly and obviously out of date, you know, which refers to things that happened years and years ago. So deciding really who's going to run the website going forward is really important. Having a web editor, somebody there that is there to kind of monitor and look after the site and kind of keep it moving, really, is really important too. So don't underestimate the need to keep your content fresh and up to date.
That's particularly true if you've purchased a content management system. There needs to be somebody whose job it is to look after the website and make sure it's up to date. Mm. That's so important.
And you can't, even when you distribute the update, you know, with a content management system, you can have multiple people updating the site. Mm. But even that, you still need, I think, one individual that is going to chase those others to make sure they do their job, and to keep a check on editorial style and accuracy and all of those kinds of things. So having a web editor, not necessarily a full-time position, but having somebody there that is going to look after the content of the site, absolutely key. So there's our top 10 moans, really. we've totally run out of time, so I'm not going to do a review this week, but I do just want to mention a few news items that have come up. One is, I thought I'd found another web design podcast, one called Live Motion Studio, that is available via iTunes, and I was really excited about this, and I thought, hurrah, there's more than just the two of us doing it. But I discovered, no, not the case at all. They're on iTunes, but there's no podcast associated with it at the moment. But you might want to check it out. It's Live Motion Studio. I'm sure they're going to put something up soon. And they claim that their podcast will be innovative. Thank you. Elegant and creative web design and development. So I'm looking forward to hearing what they've got. So check that out. Another thing that you might want to check out is, I think I mentioned in a previous podcast, that the W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium, which is the organization that is responsible for setting standards online for things like HTML and accessibility and that kind of stuff, that they've completely redesigned their site, and one of the things that's on that site now is a business plan for accessibility. So if you're having trouble selling either accessibility to your clients or internally within your organization, or you yourself need to kind of be convinced about the value of making your site accessible, then go and check this out, and you can read their business plan of why it's worth making your site accessible. It's really good. It's a brilliant read, and it's also tailored towards different types of business. You can access that again through boagworld.com/podcast and select episode 3, and I'll put the URL up there for you. Another thing I want to mention, which is going to make Marcus groan, is I have discovered what looks like a really new, really good new live chat facility. The reason it's going to make him groan is because I always go on about it and he's not convinced by the benefits of them.
For us.
But it is of benefits to some of our clients.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just to be clear what live chat is, it means when you go to a website, or if you own a website, do it that way around, as visitors come to your site, you can see them arrive on your site, you can see them move around your site, and you can initiate a live chat with them. And they can initiate a live chat with you, which basically enables you to have a kind of instant messaging conversation with them and help them around your site. This new one called Staff Online is really worth checking out. Again, the URL will be on my website. What's good about it is, one, it's built in Flash, which is a really almost universally accessible plugin that vast majority of people have installed on their machine anyway, which is much better than some of the other solutions that have been around, which have used Java or inadequately used JavaScript and various other things. So it's built in Flash, which is cool. But what's really cool about it is you can have audio conversations as well now.
Oh, right. I didn't know that.
Yeah, which is really quite cool. And even the person representing the company can also have a webcam up, so they can actually, you know, you can see that it really is a pretty young woman that's talking to you and not some grisly old man. sorry, that's very sexist of me. So check it out, staffonline.com. It's not cheap. I think it works out at about $99 per month. But that is about equivalent of LivePerson, which is considered the industry leader at the moment and isn't built in Flash and doesn't have these kind of audio features to it as well. So it's really worth checking out and see whether it's applicable to either your clients or your own business. Finally, I just wanted to mention that Macromedia now is running its own podcasts, which is very cool. I haven't listened to them myself. They looked far too Flash orientated for my liking, because I'm really crap at Flash. I don't know why. I've got some kind of mental block with it. So luckily I've got a lot of good Flash developers around me, so I can just claim ignorance. But they do podcasts now, which look very cool, and worth checking them out for hints and tips on using Macromedia products, especially Flash. I think we better wrap it up, as we're coming nearer 40 minutes than we are to the 30 that we normally go with. Although we did waffle a bit before we started the actual podcast, didn't we, Marcus? So.
Well, I've got to finish with a few things that I read earlier on, which are some real answers from an American TV game show, completely irrelevant to web design, but they made me laugh so much, I've got to tell you what they are.
Okay.
Question, name a song with Moon in the title. Answer, Blue Suede Moon. question, name an item of clothing worn by the Three Musketeers. Answer, a horse. This is real, by the way.
I'm not convinced this is real. Nobody's that stupid.
No, it's game show stuff from America. What do you expect? Oh, no, I mustn't say things like
no,
that.
No, a lot of our audience from America are in trouble now.
Uh-oh. Final one, then. Name something that flies that doesn't have an engine. Answer, a bicycle with wings.
That's very bad. By the way, if you want to email Marcus about his anti-American comments, you can do so at marcus.lillington@headscape.co.uk. So there you go. Okay, for everything that we've talked about in this podcast, check out boagworld.com/podcast. Also, feel free to check out boagworld.com, which has got loads of different articles and I try and post on it regularly. If you've got any comments, again, I'm really keen to get people's comments and feedback. We've had some really good stuff that I will try and act upon and incorporate. Then you can email me at paul@boagworld.com. And if you have got, we would love other people's voices. So if you want to ask a question of us or you want to make some comments about this podcast, you can also send me MP3 files as well and we'll kind of put those into the mix. So thank you for listening and I hope you join us again next week. Bye.